weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 266 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Every once in a while, I record an interview that I wish I could get everyone to listen to, and this week is a perfect example. I talk with Kwanza Osejafo about his excellent comic, Black. It comes out from Black Mask Studios, and the first three issues are out. I love the premise, which is something really sci-fi, and yet has something interesting to say about today's society. I talked with Kwanza about how the book came to be, about the various characters, and about one of my very favorite subjects, diversity in the comics industry. Please be sure to listen to this great conversation. I think you'll enjoy it as much as I did when I was talking with him. One quick note, the introductory piece and the one that follows his interview are both from his very successful Kickstarter, another subject we discuss. And again, I wish everyone could listen to what he has to say. It's a very important podcast this week, so let's get on with the show.
A lot of people are drawn to comics as a form of escapism or power fulfillment. We identify with characters who are outsiders in society because they reflect things that are going on in the real world. The metaphors about race are obvious. But in a world of the fantastic, mutants, metahumans, evos, they're not plausible reflections of a demonized minority. Most of these characters that are presented as outcasts, they can take off their masks, not use their powers, and live among normal society. Black folk don't have that luxury. And that's when I had a thought. What if only black people had superpowers?
It's great to welcome to the podcast Kwanza Osejafo, the creator of Black, this wonderful comic that has one of the most creative premises I've ever seen, and so appropriate for today. How are you doing today, Kwanza?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good. When I first heard the premise of Black, I was just thrown by it. I just thought how appropriate, because it's a very Star Trek kind of a thing. What if something happens? Does it change something? Does the world change around it? Kind of stuff. I just love that about it. And the premise, as I understand it, and you can elaborate if you want, is that black people are the ones that get powers in the Earth. And there's a somewhere where I saw there was a description of it that said, in a world that already hates and fears them, what if only black people had superpowers? After miraculously surviving being gunned down by police, a young man learns that he is part of the biggest lie in history. Now he must decide whether it's safer to keep it a secret or if the truth will set him free. So really, just a fantastic concept. You know, a lot of things are something you think about but really didn't apply to reality. But this is a concept that I think is something we can talk about that I think today is an ideal time to delve into this stuff. Would you want to talk a little bit about how you came up with it? I read somewhere you were thumbing through comics and this premise kept coming into your mind. Was that how the whole idea for Black came about?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a love of comic books, you know, since I was a child. And I grew up reading a lot of the same comic books we all read today, a lot of the stuff that inspired us to become comic book readers. And being like young and nerdy, of course, I gravitated towards, you know, sort of like outsider premises. So the idea of the X-Men was really appealing. Like here was a group of people who didn't quite fit the norm. They were different. They were ostracized because of that. But as I grew older and eventually became a professional in the field, one of the things that started to really like stand out with the X-Men was that, in particular, in the context of their own universe, is that they didn't really fit that parallel that they were trying to represent, which was a minority group, an ostracized minority group, a marginalized and oppressed one, in particular because of how they looked. With the exception of maybe Nightcrawler or Beast, the rest of the X-Men really didn't have anything that was going to make them about them that would make them stand apart from society. Mm-hmm. Cyclops wasn't going to get pulled over because he's driving a nice car. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody's going to ask Wolverine why he's walking around, you know, like their neighborhood or if he lives there and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it as an analogy for like any minority group that's really sort of receives prejudice because of how they look, like women, people of color, you know, the X-Men kind of fall down. Mm-hmm. And as someone who was working in the field, I also noticed as well that there was an absence of black characters that were really diverse. I mean, outside of the Milestone era back in the 90s, you know, we'd really kind of gone back to the tropes of just the black team member on the character, who was often like two-dimensional, didn't really get that much time on the page, or was essentially there for tokenism. And it made me think, what if there was a setup where only black people had superpower? And I kind of, the idea popped into my head, and I didn't, and I thought about it for a second because it was just something I thought. And then I was like, wait a second, what if that happens? Like, the context around that would have so many implications in a real world setting, which is where we try to base all of our sci-fi. You know, we're really just doing a what if. In all cases, like, what if people could turn to metal? What if people could fly? What if they went into space and got powers? Like, we're all, that's the question we're always entertaining. And so with this story, I thought, man, this is something that people would immediately get. Like, you don't really have to explain it much past the tagline. Because especially if you live in the United States, like, that has immediate context. So that was sort of the inspiration behind it, you know, wanting to really take away the veneer and really get down to, like, you know, something that reflected accurately our lives, because it's not just a black story. It's a story about how race plays in our lives and with a sci-fi twist.
So your book is more of a real X-Men.
I would say so. I mean, because, you know, you often hear comic fans say, like, it's like, oh, you know, the X-Men, they're really based off of, like, the, you know, schism of, like, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, which isn't true. It was actually just based off of the atomic era. I mean, I think one of Stan Lee's, like, finer qualities is that he was able to immediately see, like, oh, wait, holy crap. Like, I came with this idea, but it actually appeals in this other way. Yeah, that's the mark of a good storyteller. But I definitely think if people made that comparison, it would be accurate.
Now, of course, it's described on the Black Mass Studios website as X-Men meets The Wire.
Yeah.
Which I like. I think that's very appropriately done. I think I love The Wire. I was gripped to it. It was one of the reasons, the only reason at that time I bought HBO was to watch The Wire, which I really loved. I had a friend that actually was a stand-in at one point.
With oh, awesome.
It, which is kind of cool. So I could relate to this. And of course, Baltimore, I was living in the Washington, D.C. area, which wasn't far from Baltimore. So I kind of understood a little bit of what was going on. Granted, I'm a white guy. I don't understand all the stuff in it. And it's the same thing with black. I'm sure there's a lot of other things going on, undercurrents that maybe I don't understand as well as others might. But, you know, I still enjoy the story. I still enjoy the thing. And I hope reading it will help me on some levels understand that a little bit more, which I like. Because it's a great comic. Let's start off by saying that. It has great...
Thank you.
It's the pacing's good. Characters are vibrant. I love the fact that not everybody gets along with the program right away. Why don't we start at the beginning of it, if we can, real quickly? Because it's a very realistic setting of what happens at the beginning. You know, you could have said it right out there. They always say, rip from the headlines, and really, it could have been.
That's interesting, too, because, you know, I came up with the concept for this, like, 10 years ago. That's when I approached my co-creator, Tim, to, you know, help me, like, sort of be the visualist to flesh out this world. And, you know, at the time, it seemed very relevant then. And we sort of, like, sat on it because we were both, like, working professionals and time constraints. Putting out a comic every month is a big endeavor, believe it or not. It's not as easy as it looks. But times have changed. You know, things like Kickstarter emerged, like, you know, and the ability to get stories like this out there didn't really necessitate going through a publisher or pitching. And it was still relevant. Like, sadly, it's still relevant. It was more relevant. 10 years later. So I really sat down with the idea and said, how is it that I can start this story off with the protagonist, Kareem Jenkins, being shot by the police and then coming back to life because he has superpowers? You know, it's like, wow, that still works. Often I imagine a writer does something and they're like, oh, you know, that was a good idea 10 years ago. Let me rework that. But that's always been the catalyst in the story. And it was still relevant, like, years later. And that was kind of surprising.
I always have to ask, when people come up with characters, do you come up with characters? Are they people you know that you've translated? Are they people that have come out in your imagination? How did you develop the characters in this?
I think all of the characters are all, like, you know, like little fragments of my own psyche, but I do base a lot of the characters in there off of people I know. I kind of use their personalities as the sort of foundation that I kind of mold into a different story. So I kind of use that as like sort of the base code, you know, to build the programs that these characters turn out to be. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of people who are representative of friends and family.
Cool. Now, I got to tell you one other thing, too, is that I always, when I read black characters in comics, they speak the king's English, shall we say. And I'm always kind of frustrated with that, because when I speak with folks of who are diverse, they don't talk like that. They have other ways of saying things. And in your books, I was so relieved to see that you actually did that, because I was sitting there going, you know, these feel like real people to me when you do those kinds of things. Instead of speaking in perfect English all the time, you know, the, what we call perfect, your characters a lot of the time do, but there's times when they're frustrated or when something is going on that they use, you know, colloquialisms that are common in black culture, it seems to me. And so I was so happy when I saw that, because it just gave me this feel of reality to it. Did you do that intentionally? Was it just something that, because you were working with fragments of characters, that made sense to you? How did you decide to do that? Because that's not what comics are doing.
Yeah, it's a challenge, because being an editor myself, I had that debate with my editor, Sarah Litt, and it was something that I understood internally, like, her argument against that. But I felt very strongly that accents are important. I remember being in New Orleans not too long ago, and I just randomly took one of those like carriage rides, and the gentleman who was driving the horses, man, he had a really thick New Orleans accent. And I thought it was kind of beautiful, because I couldn't understand a thing he was saying at first. But as I just sat there and like listened to him tell me about the city, eventually like it just became plain English in my head. You know, it's like all the inflections and like words just started to make a little bit more sense in context. But I thought it was important to also show diversity of language, because, you know, not all black people speak the same as well. There's so many dialects and pidgins and colloquialisms that are used across the United States by, you know, Southern blacks, Northern blacks, Caribbean blacks, like West Indies, like it's just all different, and getting those accents and trying to phonetically, you know, be true to them. And I'm certain I don't always get it right, but it's fun, you know, and it's fun to like represent that, because if you were to talk to somebody who was just like super deep Rastafarian like type fellow, like, he's going to have a whole lexicon that he uses. And he's not particularly concerned with like whether or not you understand it or not. Yeah, he's just speaking. And I thought it was really important to like keep those things in the book and not try to translate them and make them easy for people to understand, because that's the fun of reading anything. You know, you go and maybe do a little research afterwards. Those are things that I remember being really fun when I was a kid reading like stuff that Chris Claremont wrote, because he never talked down to his reader. Or tried to simplify things. Like his characters spoke in different ways, but there were often words in there that I just didn't understand. Or he might have a character in there who sort of had a bit of an accent, and that made me think about like, oh, where's this character from? Why do they speak that way? And what does it say about them? You know, like I didn't really think too much about Cajun culture before Gambit. And I was like, oh, Cajuns. That exists. That's a group of people. They speak a certain way.
Well, we get to understand people. Like I said, it made it more real to me to read the stuff. And I didn't have trouble understanding what they were saying, to be honest with you. You know, maybe I've been exposed to it a little bit, but you know, I haven't been exposed to as many other people have. But to me, I actually, it was good to me, because I could sit there and sort it out pretty easily the way you had done it. And you understand what's being, as you're describing what's happening, you should have pictures and stuff to help us too, in case we struggle a little bit with it. But I was so relieved to see that, because honestly, that was one of the very first times I've ever seen that happen in a comic. And I thought, you know, it's something that I hope more comics will do, because, you know, when I see like Miles Morales, and he talks like as if he graduated from Harvard, and, you know, that's wonderful. I think if he did graduate from Harvard, that'd be wonderful, but he didn't. And so I was always looking at him. I was hoping he would say some things a little less perfect in terms of the lexicon. And when I got to your book and I saw that, I said, oh, man, this is terrific. Just another thing that made this book reach out to me and made it just resonate. How great it was. Now, I got to ask, too, because you're doing this in sort of a black sepia tone kind of a thing. It's not color. You can't say black and white because there's gradations of stuff going on. There are, like, grays and browns and stuff like in the background. Because, you know, that's a challenge because, you know, a lot of people don't want black and white comics these days. And yet I think that suits the tone of the story you're telling to do it that way. Did you start out wanting to do it that way?
It's funny. I always imagined the story from the very beginning in black and white. And I personally prefer black and white comics. Like, I like manga. I don't really need color. It's sort of like, I feel like sometimes it's great. Like, sometimes color is amazing and stuff like that. But sometimes I also feel like it sort of forces aspects of the narrative on the reader. And to me, black was something that I knew people were going to bring their own baggage to, in particular because of the context. So I didn't want to just double down on that by like enforcing color as well. It was funny, I was talking with the creative team about it, and I said to Tim, I was like, I actually don't know what the colors of any of these characters are. I don't know. Like, in my head, I see it as black and white. I was like, maybe you do because you created like the designs for all of them, but like, I have no idea. Yeah.
So you don't envision this ever going in color. Like some people, like say Bone, for example. Mm-hmm. Bone came out and it was black and white. And then they got to a place where they reprinted it. But when they did that in little hardcovers and paid paperbacks now, they made it color. So you want to keep this pretty much in the way that it's done now all the time.
Well, I think it's the same as why we decided to go and do the periodical, and our original intention from the Kickstarter was just to do self-published graphic novel, was that people really wanted to read the story, and it just seemed like a good way to get it into people's hands by doing the periodical, working with Black Mass. Once they approached us, it just seemed like the right thing to do. The same thing I feel about color. Like, my preference doesn't necessarily reflect the readers, so if there's a desire for a color one at some point, I'm not against it. I just would probably not be the one leading that. I think I would like hand that over to Tim. It's like, all right, tell me what this world looks like in color, dude. I have no idea.
That's pretty cool because it does fit the tone of what's going on real well, I thought, so as I've read it. And now there's 3 issues out so far. Mm-hmm. Where are we in the scheme of things? How many issues do you have planned? How often do these come out? What's the best way for people to get them? All these good things we need to know.
So the book is monthly, though I think we're going to go bi-monthly for the remaining after Chapter 4 comes out. And Chapter 4 is going to be out on February 8th, and it's 6 issues. Chapter 6 is going to be a double-size issue. When we did the Kickstarter, one of the, what do you call them?
Rewards
was if we hit a certain point, we'd add a 20-page fight scene. And so that was going to be in the 6th issue. And that was something I thought would be really fun because often, like, you know, you have like big event comics or like some big payoff battle in a comic and it's like 2 pages, you know, or it's a few pages and like the one guy punches the other guy and then that's kind of it. And you're like, wow, all this build up and that's all you get. I thought it'd be amazing if we could actually just have 20 pages where it's just like, this is the big payoff. This is your Civil War scene. Captain America. So after the 6th issue, that's the first book. The plan was originally to do 3 books, sort of a Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi kind of trilogy. But we've been talking with Black Mask and, you know, hearing reader response, and we're planning some interstitials. So we're going to do some Rogue Ones in between those books. So I'll kind of give us some time because the plan is to have Jamal draw the 3 main books. And, you know, he's got other projects to work on, like Molly Danger and stuff like that. Kari's got other work as well. So it's kind of like give everybody a break, do some stories in between, and then like reconnect for like the big event comics.
Which is cool. That's all great. I love to see all these good things. And my hope is that Black will be a launching place. Because I know Jamal from Molly Danger. That's where I read him. I've talked to him at conventions and stuff like that. And I hope to get him on the podcast here at some point. But I like the fact that you guys are getting noticed. And one of the things about getting noticed that really got my attention, in fact, this was the first way I heard about the book, was your Kickstarter campaign. You took in 3 times the amount you were asking.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, wow, because, you know, a lot of people struggle to get their goal and stuff like that. But here you were, three times what you were asking for. It was like, what, $90-some thousand?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. How did that happen? Do you know, was it that you reached out to people, the word of mouth got out? How did that happen?
I think we just got some really good coverage. Like, I work in marketing in my day job, mm-hmm. but, you know, I knew that because of that, I wasn't exactly going to have time to devote to the marketing, especially, you know, you're doing a Kickstarter. That's like a third job. Mm-hmm. So we partnered with Superfan Promotions, oh. sort of like help us have those like tethers and try and like help us tell the story, because Black wasn't just about the comic story. It was also about the story of like what inspired us to create it, what brought us together. You know, there was a story behind the story that, you know, we wanted people to know, because like you brought up about characters like Miles Morales and stuff like that, which it's great that in the industry we're starting to see a bit more diversity of like branded characters, but those are branded characters. There's a commercial driver behind the creation of those. And for us, Black was more about our intrinsic need to tell stories that showed a more diverse cast of Black characters, but also were coming from the voice of Black creators. We weren't being hired or commodified or Columbus'd into this thing. We were here to tell a story that, you know, was very personal to us and that we felt very strongly about. And so that was something we wanted to, you know, really bring to life when we launched a Kickstarter. And I think that's really why people responded to it so much. They could see that there were people behind it. You know, we were very active on social media. We were very open to anyone who wanted to interview or talk to us. There wasn't really a huge barrier. We wanted people to know why we were doing this and not just have it be like, oh, here's a big thing that we're saying and here's a big event and you should just pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, this is something that's really important to us, and we literally need your help mm-hmm. to do this.
You know, most people, Kickstarters are what they call like a daily heart attack is what they refer to it, because, you know, you're hoping and hoping you get to the goal. But when you've surpassed your goal and things were probably still going, that must have been some kind of experience for you guys, because, you know, it's kind of that says that you guys are hitting a tone or a response with people. You're resonating. That must have been something when that happened. I mean, how did you guys react when you found out this was happening?
It was very much can I curse on this podcast?
Well, you can if you want to.
It was an oh shit moment.
Okay.
He's like, oh. It's like our plan was like, okay, we're going to be doing this for 30 days, and we hit our goal in four.
Wow.
So it was very much of like, oh, I didn't have a plan for this part, guys. Like, I really thought that, much like a lot of other people doing Kickstarters, we were going to be fighting tooth and nail, mm-hmm. you know, to get 30,000, and that was a scraping. You know, it was like, what was the bare minimum that we could put out this kind of story? Mm-hmm. What's the bare amount of money that we could do this for? And the fact that we were able to hit three times that, and that people were responding to it so positively, mm-hmm. that was the other real surprise, because you tell a story like this and you sort of expect that there'll be backlash. You know, there was a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that backlash was surprisingly that people felt like we were trudging up a part of history that didn't exist anymore, mm-hmm. you know, that was in the past, which was like bias, oh. in particular bias against Black people. So a lot of the backlash was disbelief, you know, or that like we were just fanning the flames of something that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting that in the midst of all this, you know, our election sort of raised mm-hmm. raised that specter back up to the forefront, and a lot of that died down very quickly, because it's like, nope, this is still a thing, everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the stories. I love the fact that there are two organizations kind of against each other. The one that has Kareem in it, and the other one, which it's called the Man Company. Which I got it, you know, of course, working for the Man and all that stuff. I love the name of that. I just got a huge kick when I read it. So all those guys, it's a very smart book. There are wonderful references. Some I do get. I'm sure there's some that just passed me right by, but there were some wonderful things, and I don't want to spoil them, because I think it's worth reading the book to get to them. But just some wonderful things in there. It's full of action. It's full of character. I think you balance all this stuff real well. I think the art that Jamal did is fantastic. I just think it's just a wonderful book. In a way, I'm sorry you're going to do six, but that leads me to ask you another question. Do you guys have plans for things you're going to do after Black gets done?
Yeah, so I'm focusing on the plan for the interstitials now to like just do some sort of like kind of one-shot stories. Doing a comic for 6 months, you know, and it's not a six-month process. It's like, you know, a year and a half, two-year process can be a little bit daunting, and it's something where I really kind of want to continue to flex and experiment with the medium a little bit too, and see if there's other ways that we can tell these stories that aren't necessarily the issue after issue method. Mm-hmm. I think that's fine for, like, again, something like Black right now in the moment, but the subsequent stuff, I want to experiment a little bit more, mm-hmm. but also tell stories that, like, people get the whole story and then they can walk away with, like, pieces. You know, there's not necessarily, there's no part two to Rogue One. Mm-hmm. You know, you're never going to see a Rogue One sequel. So it's kind of like that.
Right. And the great thing about this, and this leads to the last subject I want to get to, it must be real satisfying for you because, as you mentioned, you've got 10 years in the industry. Mm-hmm. And there was a sentence you said. You wrote an article at a website, and I was reading it, and I came across a sentence, and it kind of smacked me across the face. It's talked about, you say, diversity is on trend, but inclusion is not. And I thought, that's an amazing sentence to say, you know, because we talked about the business, about there some kind of tokenism occasionally happens and stuff like that. And in that article, you talked about the fact that you worked at DC and Marvel, and it was difficult to get your ideas noticed, even within the organizations. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because you talked that you got discouraged with working in the industry, but you still loved comics. So what was that like for you? Because you talk about this one thing we say where writing Black is bittersweet. It should have existed earlier. And talk to me about that. I mean, talk about how your feelings are, because this has really taken off in a wonderful way, and it's probably more popular than if it had been in DC or Marvel.
Yeah, and that's sort of the interesting part of it, too, because, you know, I started out as an intern in Marvel, and I eventually became an online editor, and that's kind of where I forged my career in comics, was very much through technology and doing like more cutting edge stuff. Like, that's kind of where I wanted to be, was like on the forefront, whatever was progressive. Mm-hmm. And part of that choice was the culture of comics. Like, once I started to see a little bit under the hood and like what the culture was there, it was something I immediately didn't want to necessarily be a part of, mm-hmm. and didn't see that there was room for me to be a part of. But it was also because I didn't see a lot of progress there. And in online and digital stuff, I saw a lot more territory to explore. It was a bit more of the Wild West, but it was also offered a lot more freedom. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I found interesting after leaving Marvel and then years later showing up at DC is just like, so much just hadn't changed in terms of like that culture and that perspective. Mm-hmm. And that gets reflected in the work. Mm-hmm. So the thing about these companies is that they're still very much white male. Mm-hmm. So when you don't see anything but white males in their content, there's a reason for that. And it's not malicious. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great people that work there, a lot of hardworking, smart people, but they have a very singular perspective, mm-hmm. you know, and that's going to be reflected in who they hire, what kind of stories are important to them, what kind of stories they're telling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every once in a while you have somebody who's like wakes up for a little bit, but then you also don't have a cultural structure or a business structure there where somebody's going to champion something as well, mm-hmm. and say like, this is an important thing for us to do. This is an important thing for us to like really get behind. And we know how to do it as well. Mm-hmm. We know how to tell that story because we have people here who can do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, between my 10 years between Marvel and DC, mm-hmm. I was like the only Black editor, mm-hmm. and I wasn't even in editorial. So there weren't many there. And when I say editor, I mean like full editor. I wasn't an assistant. Mm-hmm. You know? I was an editor. I had my own agency. Like, I had my own imprint at DC. These were spaces where like I could move and direct a bit. But throughout those years, like, I saw a lot of frustration with women and people of color, whether that was like, you know, on the editorial side, but also in freelance, where their perspective was often overlooked unless they were playing to the mainstream desires, you know, or playing to the culture. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to see that shift at Marvel in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. which has been great. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been some great minds behind it, but at the same time, knowing that they still internally haven't diversified very much. So mm-hmm. while you're seeing like all these great, you know, the Black Captain America, the Black Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and more Luke Cage, you know, being prominent, Black Panther, what you're not seeing is people who can really speak to the creators that they're going after. So like when Marvel had the whole kerfuffle about the hip hop covers, to me, that was laughable because it's like, of course, that's what everybody was going to say to you guys. It's like you went after this genre of music to like boost attention for your content. And yet you didn't notice that you don't hire very many like creators of color. Black creators specifically, because you don't have any internal like people who would have pointed that out to you, you know, who you would listen to. So it's like without that agency within these companies, then you still have things where, to circle back what you said about Miles Morales' dialogue, creatives who are even playing it safe. In some respect, I think Bendis is essentially creating a very cookie cutter version of a black character because to take Miles out of that territory would be some place that he's not comfortable with, which is respectable as a writer. But it's also like, you know, to you as a reader, it's something that kind of sticks out to you. You're like, well, who is this kid? What really makes him different other than the veneer? To go back to the beginning of our conversation, it's a different veneer now that you put on him in order to like sell these comic books and sell this concept. What's really driving this?
Well, of course, now I got to ask you. I promised myself I wasn't going to do it, but you brought it up. I got to ask anyway. What is your impression when Marvel or anybody else takes a person of color and puts it into an existing uniform? We're talking Miles Morales. He became Ultimate Spider-Man and stuff. See, to me, I've seen such wonderful books like what your book is. There's Legend of the Montemagi, which I really love. There's another book, which is, you talk about universe building. He's doing universe building. And Exo, which I interviewed last week about. All these black creators who are making black stories in that sense, and that they are bringing characters in and telling the stories that the rest of us really can't do. I always feel like it's a cheat when they take a person of color and stuff them in a uniform that exists. It's going to be easy to sell that book because, you know, Spider-Man is a well-known character. You put a person of color in there, and then suddenly there's a big push on it. Everybody thinks, wow, it's going to be that. But to me, I always feel like there's a culture that we have not even begun to tap. We came up with Blue Beetle because beetles were important for some reason. They made it blue because blue was the color in that time. But there's a whole culture in there that's really untapped where all these stories and characters could spring out of. And I think when we do this kind of stuff, like the female Iron Man that's now going on, I think that is such a cheat to the creativity. There's so much that can be done. And it just feels to me like this is the easy way. Instead of doing something that is challenging and fun and creative and new, we're going the old-fashioned route. Right. I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
You know, it's kind of a double-edged sword because as a consumer, as a professional, as a reader of color, I see the benefit of having, you know, the Falcon become Captain America, of having Miles Morales as Spider-Man, of having, you know, Kamala is Miss Marvel. Yet at the same time, I agree with you in that like it's sort of a cheat, but I see why it is, because what you're saying is true. Like, these characters might not be accepted if they're original. They have a much tougher hill to climb as like original characters, because now you really have to sell through who they are to a consumer base that is very comfortable with what they know. You know, so I think in some respect, that's probably why Black has done well, because what I've done is I've taken the familiar superhero trope that everybody knows. They have superpowers, like underground society, ostracized by like a government power and stuff like that, but then grounded it in a reality that we know. So I think that's sort of like the trick with comics a lot of time, is you're taking the familiar and then trying to explore something that's a little bit unfamiliar, but you're always kind of being careful like how far you go. I think with Marvel, it's like, and DC as well, it's like it might be asking a lot of them. Like, they don't have the internal people in there to like really champion and understand like too many other cultures. They are not really the best marketers in the world. I think Marvel's like benefit has been, you know, like being part of Disney, who are like the masters of it. DC's just starting to kind of get their feet wet, but they're not really good at it, you know, yet. So, you know, you've got this thing where it's just like, how do you get these characters out there when like the system isn't in place to like really like push them forward and stuff like that, and tell a story that's going to be appealing. Mm-hmm. You know, so cheat is a tough thing, because even though I'm of the opinion that it's a commodification, I also know that, like, they don't really have a lot of choice.
Well, let me ask you something, though, because you mentioned it, and it's something that I really loved when it came out, and every once in a while they make rumbles that it might come back. If Milestone was to come back, would you want to – because you work for Dwayne McDuffie, as I understand it.
I didn't work with him. I pitched him when I was 16. Yeah, when I was 16 and Milestone came out, that was, like, a huge turning point. Like, that's what inspired me to really take on comics as a profession, because before – Milestone, I didn't think that it was a real job I could have. You know, and so I pitched Milestone, and Dwayne had me in his office, and he, you know, was very polite. I was 16, for Christ's sake, so, you know, my ideas were not good. They weren't good. But he, you know, he told me how comics work. You know, he gave me a 1-hour mentorship that really changed my life.
Wow. Now, of course, got to ask you, if they were going to start Milestone and they came to you, look, we want to get Milestone, but we want it to be more authentic, would you do that?
No way. Not with the current way that DC is structured, and it might seem a little pointed to say exactly why, but I do not think that with a mind like Dan DiDio at the helm, there's room for something like Milestone to really get the support that it needs to flourish. You know, I don't really feel that the leadership there has the ability or the intrinsic desire to really do something like that aside from the press release or the headline. Well, like, they like the news, but not the hard work.
Well, let me ask you then, what would you like to see happen in the industry as far as, you know, you've got Black and it's a success, other books are coming out and they're successful. You're part of Black Mask. They have a reputation for kind of doing things that the other companies won't, which is kind of fun. But is Black Mask kind of the thing that you want to do? And not, nothing against Black Mask, but as you look down the road and you see as a creator that you want to do and hopefully make diversity more inclusive and stuff like that, what do you want to see happen in the industry?
I want to see more people realize that there is more room out there for them to tell the sorts of stories that they want to, and that they, and I mean, people already see it, but that they don't have to do that through Marvel and DC, because through Marvel and DC, what you're going to do is tell stories about Batman and Spider-Man, and that's fine. And that's fun. Those are awesome toys to play with, but it's not really doing anything except making Marvel and DC more money so that more people, freelancers who need to work, are just sort of beholden to those paychecks. You know, I mean, as creatives, we need to create and tell our own stories. So I'd like to see more independent stuff, more small publisher stuff, because it's not necessarily small anymore.
That'd be cool. I think there are some companies now that are broaching that, and it's starting to happen. And I'd like to see more of it, to be honest with you, because, you know, I read comics to see something. I don't have aliens living under my porch kind of stuff. I want to see stuff I haven't seen before. And so for me to experience different cultures, different situations, these are the things that I go to comics for. Yeah. And so for me, I want to see more of that. I don't want to see less. I think there's a hunger out there for that, to be honest with you. I'd like to see more of Black kind of stories.
Yeah, and I think that's why you've seen this explosion, and like why you've seen like a company like Marvel try to like kind of get on that bandwagon of diversity, because I think the comic readers, even though they've been used to something for so long, I think they've started to get a little bored with it. They're like, I'm tired of seeing the same old thing. I think it's also why TV shows like Empire have been such huge hits, because people are like, oh, I've been fed this same perspective for like decades. It's boring. This is something new and fresh.
Yep, I want to see something I haven't seen before. I'm telling you, it's a big thing. And granted, your book has some superheroic things that make it a comic that people, maybe some of the stuff is a little more familiar, but on the other hand, the characters are very different. And so seeing them react to the situation makes it something unique to me. Something I really like about it. So I encourage people, if you have not read Black, get out there and see it. 3 issues out so far, 3 to go. Please be sure to get a hold of it. Are you going to trade when this is done?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think people like having the whole story together.
Now, what about future stuff? Because Black is going well. Are there other projects besides Black and outside the Black universe that you're working on that we should be looking for?
Definitely. My intention was not to make any stuff from Black my next project, but I'm going to prioritize that for a little bit so that I could queue stuff up so that I can then focus on some other stuff, because I'd really like to explore doing different kinds of comic storytelling, but in different mediums, whether it's like digital, VR, stuff like that. I really want to see where else we can tell comic book stories.
Cool, because Black honestly could be a great little animated movie in my mind.
I've heard that. People have said that, like TV movies. I'm like, that's awesome. Whenever anybody wants to come and do that.
It just screams that out to me. So I'd love to see that as far as those things go. So well, that's good. You've got good things going, and I'm looking forward to you doing more in the future, Kwanzaa. And now, as far as like keeping up with you, your Facebook, are you and Twitter?
I'm definitely active on Twitter. My handle is like at Kwanzaa. The Black handle is at Black Superpowers without the E's at the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much it. My Facebook is private. I don't really do anything. We have Black on there. So Black is on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you right now, you're lucky because Facebook right now is a mess. You're lucky not to be there. I've had to unfriend a whole bunch of people because it's just too much for me sometimes. But
yeah, interestingly, I make good friends, I guess, because I've not had to do that, and I've been very lucky.
Oh, man, you're lucky. So, but anyway, you're doing great stuff, and man, really challenging and interesting writing, and you're making a terrific book that I think is groundbreaking. And so I hope even more people get to read your stuff because I think it's going to be great, and I can't wait to see what you're going to do next.
Awesome, thank you.
All good stuff. So keep it up.
I will. That's the plan.
Thank you, and go Black.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another interview with a great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
What's that?
Well, the tumbler? Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
This baby works just fine. So what do you think?
Does it come in black?